All right, you mentioned John Miller. If I'm not mistaken, you grow up in Virginia hearing John Miller on Orioles games, and then you become his partner or one of his partners at 26. Is that right?
I think I was 26 when I did my first Giants game.
So can you touch on the arc of that relationship in whatever way makes sense to you?
I mean, I can close my eyes and really remember, because I grew up in Washington, D.C., and we didn't have a team. So the Orioles were our team, and maybe three or four times a summer, we'd go up to Memorial Stadium and watch an Orioles game, you know, birthday party or just a game that my dad got tickets to or whatever. And I can remember, especially remember after the game, you know, you'd watch the game, you'd go to your car, get in the station wagon, and it's a 1 hour drive home. It's a long drive home. And we put the you know, WTOP or whatever station was on the radio at that time, and the Orioles games were on, and John would be doing the post game show, and John would be doing the highlights and the out of town scores. And even more than calling the games, I can actually remember John doing that part of it. Like after a game as a kid driving home and listening to him recreate the game and do the highlights.
Doing his own post game. So was that more common than I realized at that, well, in that era?
We still do it to this day. I mean, we have with the Giants, and probably John has a lot to do with it. We have what we call the post-game wrap, which probably nobody else does, where all four of us, whoever's working TV and radio that day, every day, we come together on radio for a little roundtable discussion of the game. We've done that for many years, and it's probably the thing of all the stuff that fans, you know, we've had World Series championships and Bonds home run records, and we've had an incredible litany of things to call that have been great. But probably the thing that has most endeared us to Giants fans is the post-game wrap. It's totally unscripted. We don't plan it out. We don't talk about it ahead of time. We just turn the microphones on. It's the four of us, and we, for 15 minutes or so, we just talk about the game we just saw. And we have fun, and we have some laughs, and maybe every once in a while somebody breaks out and sings a song or makes up a poem or whatever. I mean, it's just – it can get a little goofy, but – we also still do game highlights and out-of-town scores on the radio. Us, not the post-game host, we do it every game. And so that continues to this day with John.
That's amazing, Dave. I mean, first of all, as a talk show host, I can tell you that the most beloved segment on Chicago sports radio, and I think it's now transcended to others, is what we call transition, when the two shows are crossing over. And it's four people with the mics open and there is no script. It also correlates to a story Chip Carey told me a couple of weeks ago about when he was a kid listening to all of the broadcasters sit there and have a cocktail after the game in Atlanta and just seeing them kind of process it. You guys are giving that to the listeners. That's phenomenally valuable. Do you know of any other team that does it in MLB, to your knowledge?
I don't think so. I think a couple teams maybe have tried it. Now, look, all of us are spoiled, and most guys, the last out is made, I'm going home. Like, it's just – so we have this culture now that's in place, and a lot of nights probably the four of us want to say, I just want to go home. But we have stuck with this for a long time, and it is true. Our fans love it. And what I think is particularly valuable, like it's really fun after a great win, a great game. You know, we're all sort of yucking it up and you celebrate the great moments of the game. Where I think it's particularly valuable for our fans is after a tough loss or a terrible game, where we either as a group find some positives or have a laugh, or look, we've all been around this a long time. It's easy for fans to get so down after a bad loss. And I think there's something cleansing about coming together and just talking it out. And by the end of it, you've had a few chuckles and everybody feels better. Like we can move on. There's a new day tomorrow. The last part of our wrap, we look ahead to the game tomorrow. And it is almost like it's like a cleansing thing for everybody who listens. And it's been great for us. And I think we all realize that. The story we all tell, and it's absolutely 100% true, is, you know, from time to time, a lot of other broadcasters like to tease us about, because they're packing up and heading out and they look in the booth and there we all are still doing our thing. And Vin would walk. Vin loved to do this. He would walk by the booth and he would peek in and he would just sort of quietly, either while we were on the air or in a little commercial break, "You all must be making a fortune." And it made us laugh every single time. And Euchre would do, you know, Euchre would do the same thing. He would tease us about, "Man, the money they must pay you guys to do this." Yeah, you can't believe it, Bob. So look, we've had fun over the years with all those guys. It's been really good for us.
That's so, so cool. What are some nuances that you've noticed in John Miller's work that could or have worked for you to emulate, if any?
Yeah, let me answer that, and let me also answer the question I didn't answer before, just because I thought there's one important point to make about what you asked me about growing up listening to John and then working with John.
Yes, please.
And I told this, I got asked, every once in a while I get asked to do a commencement speech or something like that, and I will use this in a speech like that because to me, it's the greatest lesson that I ever learned doing this. I was really intimidated. Look, Dwayne and Mike on their own are like absolutely legendary in San Francisco, beloved people here with our family.
For those who don't know, that's Dwayne Kuiper and Mike Kruko. I've been told if I ever get the chance to, I should interview them together because you can't separate them from each other in some ways.
In some ways that's true. They both are very individual and very different, but together is what had made them who they are over all these years. So those are our primary television voices. Although now, you know, with the Giants more than any other team, we cross over. I do have radio, TV. We go back and forth in the middle of games. We switch on and off during games. So we do things differently than almost any other team. Anyway, Dwayne, Mike, John, me at age 26. Like, I really deep down thought, I'm set up to fail here. This is like, there is no way that me, our fans know nothing about me. There is no way that I'm going to walk in here and be somebody that they like. I'm going to look like an idiot compared to these guys. And the only reason I bring that up is the exact opposite was true. It was the best thing that could have ever happened to me to work with the very best people who not only quickly made me better just by, to your second question, just by sort of observing how they do it and picking up on some important stuff, I got better really fast, but also by getting along with them, by having a good professional relationship with them where they were able to signal to the viewers, to the listeners, like, hey, this guy's one of us. He's part of our team now. You should consider him part of our team now. Best thing that ever happened to me. And the reason I use it like at times where I am having to give some advice or whatever is like, find the best people you can be around. That your best path to success in life, no matter how much you do, is just be around the super creative, talented people who do what you want to do and let them help you, teach you, guide you, include you. It just makes you better. And so I will be forever grateful. I mean, to this day, I am. Every day I come to work with those guys. But it was a huge part of my success here in San Francisco was to be with John. And, you know, John and Dwayne and Mike are all different themselves. Like, they don't have the same ways that they're all great. They all have very different personalities. That was another great lesson for me. But I learned something from all of them.
That's amazing stuff. I want to ask if there's a – because I want to ask about some calls – from you, but let me ask first for a call from John that comes to mind that you were either sitting there as a partner for or had a game off and you're like, oh my God, listen to that guy do what he did.
Yeah, I think the thing about John is so good. He's so good to listen to through a whole game and he's got a great sense of humor, but nobody gets the big moments like John does. Like, John is so good at the huge moments and the plays at the plate and the, you know, people still love him for the Ruben Rivera call and
the pitch swinging. There's a shot deep in the right center, racing back to Lucci, still going back into Death Valley. It goes right over his glove. He missed it, but Ruben Rivera missed second base. Now he's heading for third, and they're going to throw him out by plenty, but the throw to third is botched. Now he's heading home. The loose ball in the infield, and he's out by 5 feet at the plate. And that was the worst base running in the history of the game. The game should be over, and Ruben Rivera just did the worst base running you will ever see. Unbelievable.
You know, that was sort of uniquely John, where the worst base running in the history of the game. And he's just got a, he does have an ability in the moment to give his pure natural reaction. You know, the Travis Ishikawa walk off to go to the, you know, to the World Series, win the pennant.
Now the stretch. Here it comes. Swinging. There's a drive deep into right field. Way back there. Goodbye. For the game and for the pennant, the Giants have won the pennant, and Travis Ishikawa is being clobbered by his teammates as he comes down the third base line, and he is mobbed at home plate. It's Travis Ishikawa. Travis Ishikawa with the Bobby Thompson moment. A walk-off home run to win the National League pennant. By Travis Ishikawa.
Bunch of Barry Bonds home runs that John called beautifully.
There's a high drive deep into right center field to the big part of the ballpark. Number 71, and what a shot over the 421-foot marker. The deepest part of any ballpark in the National League. And Barry Bonds is now the home run king, number 71.
But I think, John, you know, it's like the big moments, he's just amazing at capturing. And a lot of that is just a natural gift. His voice is just such an incredible instrument. He can blow it out, but still sound like he knows what he's talking about. And it's impressive.
I was fortunate enough to be listening to you and John for Alex Cobb's near no hitter last year. And there was just so many wonderful moments with the both of you. But you talk about John in real time. I'm sure you're aware. I mean, maybe you were listening. The Jeffrey Meyer home run with Jeffrey Meyer leaning over, he called that in real time. He saw it in real time and was correct about one of the most controversial plays in baseball history in the moment, which is astonishing.
There's a high fly ball to right deep. Going back is Tarasco for the warning track. For the wall, he's under it now. And it's taken away from him by a fan, and they're going to call it a home run. I can't believe it. Richie Garcia is calling it a home run, and Tarasco is asked to argue. A terrible call by Richie Garcia. It's all tied up.
Amazing, and I'm glad you brought that up. But no, I'm convinced nobody in the history of the game has a better understanding of the rules and how they are applied live in real time than John. John is incredible at diagnosing weirdness, and something totally goofy happens and he is on it. Like he knows what is happening, why a player is unhappy, why a manager, in an instant. It doesn't take him any time. I mean, that it is sort of like a supernatural talent that he has.